Here is Penn Jillette with his essay for This I Believe.
I believe there is no God. I'm beyond atheism. Atheism is not believing in God. Not believing in God is easy. You can't prove a negative, so there's no work to do. You can't prove that there isn't an elephant inside the trunk of my car. You sure? How about now? Maybe he was just hiding before. Check again. Did I mention that my personal, heartfelt definition of the word elephant includes mystery, order, goodness, love, and a spare tire? So anyone with a love for truth outside of herself has to start with no belief in God and then look for evidence of God. She needs to search for some objective evidence of a supernatural power. All the people I write emails to often are still stuck at this searching stage. The atheism part is easy. But this I believe thing seems to demand something more personal, some leap of faith that helps one see life's big picture, some rules to live by. So I'm saying, this I believe. I believe there is no God. Having taken that step, it informs every moment of my life. I'm not greedy. I have love, blue skies, rainbows, and Hallmark cards, and that has to be enough. It has to be enough, but it's everything in the world, and everything in the world is plenty for me. It seems just rude to beg the invisible for more. Just the love of my family that raised me and the family I'm raising now is enough that I don't need heaven. I won the huge genetic lottery, and I get joy every day. Believing there's no God means I can't really be forgiven, except by kindness and faulty memories. That's good. It makes me want to be more thoughtful. I have to try to treat people right the first time around. Believing there's no God stops me from being solipsistic. I can read ideas from all different people, from all different cultures. Without God, we can agree on reality, and I can keep learning where I'm wrong. We can all keep adjusting so we can really communicate. I don't travel in circles where people say, I have faith, I believe this in my heart, nothing you can say or do can shake my faith. That's just a long-winded religious way to say, shut up, or another two words that the FCC likes less. But all obscenity is less insulting than how I was brought up and my imaginary friend means more to me than anything you can ever say or do. So believing there is no God lets me be proven wrong, and that's always fun. It means I'm learning something. Believing there is no God means the suffering I've seen in my family, and indeed, all the suffering in the world isn't caused by an omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent force that isn't bothered to help or is just testing us, but rather something we all may be able to help others with in the future. No God means the possibility of less suffering in the future. Believing there is no God gives me more room for belief in family, people, love, truth, beauty, sex, jello, and all the other things I can prove and that make this life the best life I will ever have.
I mean, the law of country.
American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Wednesday, November 23rd, 2005. And this would be Newsreel, the WOG Global Sit Rep for Core Political Tyranny, Technology, and Trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening, you are too. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal, and you can get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free radio broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio. Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, OspreyRadio.info, Extreme Radio Tampa, and SRN1. And you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way that you see fit. How's everybody doing out there today on this fine Wednesday hump day, where everybody needs to be aware that, yes, in fact, your week does not necessarily have to end completely shitty. You can make changes today to affect your tomorrow. But first and foremost, let's get into some feedback. I've got a lot of feedback going on this thought crimes thing, which is, it's an interesting sort of viewpoint, man. There's a lot of stuff going on with the thought crimes, but I'm also getting feedback on a few other fronts as well. So let's start off here. Dear Sean, I think industry fat cats and political cronies are destroying the planet because they have inner ring knowledge of the big scoop. They know the planet is going to be through a huge overhaul pretty soon, i.e. an ice age or Armageddon. So why conserve the environment? It's just too out of control for now for me to rationalize it any other way. Great show, Jello for Prez. Anomaly. Well, I would have to say that there are a lot of religious conservatives in the States who believe that, in fact, the rapture is right around the corner. Like, Jesus is coming back real soon. Real soon, Jesus is going to come back, and we're all going to, you know, wind up dying anyway. So why not trash the planet because, you know, Jesus is coming? Now, you'd think that maybe I'm making that up, but that's the truth. Like, if you check a lot of the hardcore Christian doctrine, they're all about that kind of stuff. You know, time's up, Jesus is coming back, why not trash the planet? And this is a little bit frightening to me because it kind of reminds me of Blade Runner. Anybody who hasn't seen Blade Runner, that's definitely required viewing. But, when you watch Blade Runner, it's like a great world is awaiting you off-world. You know what I mean? And it's kind of a little bit frightening. Now, this also goes with the whole 2012 thing. I'm wondering if something's going to come down the pipe. Because if aliens were going to land, you know, what would they be doing? Like, you've got to look at a lot of the actions that are going on right now. It would be kind of something that they probably act the way that they're acting now. Like, you got to think that if they had inner knowledge of alien contact or the fact that something was going to happen, how would they act? And I put it to you, they act very similar to how they're acting now. It's just a thought. You know, just a thought here. But it's, it's something to look at, something to think about. New piece of feedback here. Dear Sean, a rant radio / media fan for years. I was listening to Newsreel today, Monday, November 21st. And to butter you up for the first thing I'll say, it was a great show. Well, that's good. I mean, as long as I make you think, you know, disagree, agree with me, that's great. Just think. Make sure you think for yourself. Make sure you solidify your own, you know, personality here. No one's supposed to be following me. Although I couldn't stay and listen to all of it, you and Sim should be on the air together more often. I'm working on it. I've wondered why I seem to like the Sean Kennedy radio show back when it was running as much as I did, and I'm pretty sure it's because you guys have good chemistry. Anyway, to the real message. Yeah, on that note, you know, in the new year, as things progress, and we're going to be doing more and more with the show with the two of us, I think that it is much better because, you know, Sim is very, he's an extremist vegan terrorist, and I'm a well-balanced, you know, thinking human being. So I think it's always good to have those extreme vegan terrorist viewpoints on the show, just so, you can see how totally insane the, you know, well, of course, it could be argued from the vegan extremist terrorist point of view that I could be a little bit right of center, but, you know, generally I find myself to be quite balanced, and I think that having Sim there is always good to, you know, throw the show off kilter a little bit, kind of spice it up a bit. Sim always makes things spicy. Anyway, your idea that perhaps making some thoughts a crime struck me as a terrible idea reflexively. Yes, it does kind of seem that way. But when you brought up the example of pedophiles, it's hard to argue anything like that, so I had to think. Then Sim brought up the idea you could ban books on how to get kids, and you could ban books on bombs. That also made me think. There was a contradiction. That is, I don't think knowledge should be banned. Yeah, now that's interesting. Banning them and making it, regulating it, like maybe making it difficult to get to. I don't know. It's a weird one. I haven't got the answers on that one. Eventually, my mind came to a compromise with itself. You can have books on bombs, but not books on how to blow up city buildings with them. Or listings of combinations of bombs type versus civilian population destined for maximum casualties. Well, that won't actually work because you'll get, you know, people just buy two books then. Just like with the pedophiles, you can have books on child psychology, but not books dedicated to child psychology for the purpose of getting kids into your car. Which, that's kind of, you know, a pedophile could read a book on child psychology and they could, you know, come up with a way to do that. Sick and weird, definitely M14 territory there, but, you know, that is something to consider. I'm sure there are situations where these results cause gray areas that it's hard to safeguard against. I just thought it would be something to think about. Just wondering what you thought. Well, I don't know. I mean, there's, clearly, should there be some censorship? I mean, there's those people. I mean, on one front, you kind of sit back and you go, well, my initial gut response is no censorship. Put books out on whatever you want. They're just books. But, I mean, when these books are out there, you recognize that there's going to be problems. So the problem here is not actually books. Books don't do anything. People do things. So then it becomes, should you use these books and track who reads these books? You know what I mean? If you're a pedophile and you pick up these books, then, you know, we know you're a pedophile. Not because you read the books, but because let's say you've got a guy who's a writer. Now, that's the great thing about being a writer, is that you can get as dark and twisted as you want. You know, you want to write a story, you have a character in the story who's a pedophile, and you want to make him a realistic character, so you pick up all these books on him. FBI flags you. They show up at your house, and they say, hey, why do you got all these books? You say, well, I'm a writer. I got all these books here. I'm reading these books because I'm writing this character. You show them your character sketch and everything. Say, yeah, that's where I'm at. And they go, oh, okay, then. I guess you're a writer. And then, you know, they make sure, you know, they kind of watch you for a bit and see what's going on. Now, that's kind of bad in that, you know, now you're being watched by the FBI. But you're not doing anything wrong, so you really don't have that much to worry about. You know, realistically, it's like, yeah, sure, guys. I mean, you don't need to do this because you're just going to waste your time. All you're going to be doing is wasting your time. So, you know, if you want to waste your time, fair ball. But I don't really think, you know, you need to do that. And other people get all upset about it. They're like, oh, my God, you have no right to watch me. You have no right to watch me. I'm more important than that. I'm all better than anything. So you can't watch me and be concerned about Homeland Security because even though that's your job, you know, I have rights. Well, don't get me wrong, rights of the individual are important, but, yeah, you know, there are certain, that's why you do have law enforcement. People will throw rights up in the air all the time. People pull that card, you know, all the time. Oh, this is against my rights. It's against my rights to do this. It's against my rights to do that. Well, you know, sometimes it is. Sometimes it is against their rights. You know what I mean? But you got to consider, well, you know, we're looking for a pedophile here, and we got some serious causes. It doesn't get us off to come into your house and violate your civil liberties, but we've got to get this shit done. You know, I mean, this is just how it is. Terribly sorry. We're not actually causing you any physical pain. You know, don't worry about it. This will all work out. You know, we're just after these guys, and we're going to, you know, leave you alone. You know, we need to find these people. Well, I don't agree with you searching my stuff. I'm sorry that you don't like us searching our stuff, but we have to do that because we suspect that you might be something, you know, evil. So if you could just let us do this, we'll clear you. And if you're not something evil, then you haven't got anything to worry about. Now, I really don't have that much of a problem with that logic. You know what I mean? Now, the downside is if they're out to get you, like if you're like all paranoid shit, you're like, oh, they're out to get me because I was subversive, because I was at a rally. You know, well, I don't think the FBI would really go after you just because you were at a rally. You know, if you're at a rally and things get a little crazy and you start breaking windows and smashing furniture and shit like that, yeah, you might get a face full of mace. But I don't think these guys are going to really put you in jail because our jails are pretty full. So, you know, I don't know. It's up in the air out there. I guess you have to come down to, do you think that cops are fundamentally evil in any of their guises or forms? Or do you think that cops are fundamentally good? And I put it to you that in my experiences, which, believe it or not, has not been, remote. It's not like the cops have never talked to me. I've had many an interview with different police officers in a number of different ways. And I'm here to tell you, I don't think they're evil. I don't. I think that the police are generally good people. They become cops not because they want a power trip. It's not like we're in Mexico. In this country, anyway, in Canada, I would say the cops are fundamentally good people. Now, moving right along here, in terrorism news. Now, this is an interesting story here. Home Secretary Charles Clark has authorized Babar Ahmed's extradition to face terrorism charges in the United States. Now, this is from England. A decision follows a long fight for the U.S. for his removal and by Mr. Ahmed and his supporters against the move. Now, this is this guy, okay? This is a terrorist dude. The 31-year-old computer expert from Tooting, South London, is accused of running websites supporting terrorism and urging Muslims to fight in holy wars. Okay, we're kind of in the... So he's like, yeah, fuck these guys. We hate the Americans. Go die in a holy war. Okay, thought crime, but is it... Should he be doing time for that? Probably not. He's just a piece of shit. He was arrested under the anti-terror laws in August 2004 and charged with terror crimes by a U.S. court 2 months later. Again, you know, that could be questionable because he's encouraging it, blah, 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 but he's still, you know, freedom of speech and all that good stuff. He was previously arrested under anti-terror laws December 2003, but was released without a charge, a move his supporters say proves his innocence. Well, he's already running the websites, And he's encouraging people to kill, you know, American and allies, which is, well, you know, if you're going to be in a country and go, we want to destroy this country, I think that country's got the right to go get the fuck out of our country. You know, if I bring you into my house and you're all like, we should burn this house down. Well, I think I have the right to kick you out of my house now. His lawyer says Mr. Ahmed denies the charges, and his father, Afaq Ahmed, said his son is totally innocent, and the case against him is ridiculous. His lawyers also say Mr. Ahmed, who's being held in Woodhill Prison, Milton Keynes, would be at risk of the death penalty if he's sent to the United States. Well, if he's guilty of being a terrorist bag of shit, then yeah, he deserves to die. Thanks for coming out. Last autumn, a Connecticut court judge charged Mr. Ahmed, a British citizen, with supporting terrorism, conspiring to kill Americans, and of money laundering. Oh, wait now. Money laundering got thrown in there. The charges were brought in the U.S. by as Mr. Ahmed allegedly used U.S.-based websites to recruit fighters for a cause in Afghanistan and Chechnya. Aha. So he's not just talking shit. He's recruiting people for fighting in Chechnya. In claims dating back to 1997, the U.S. government accused Mr. Ahmed of conspiring to support terrorism, saying he sought, invited, and solicited contributions via websites and emails. The U.S. Department of State has claimed he ran several websites urging Muslims to use every means at their disposal to train for jihad or holy war. It is also alleged Mr. Ahmed tries to set up a terrorist training camp in Arizona. All right, so he's trying to set up a camp in Arizona. That's, you know, I mean, that if it's true, you know, I don't know how you'd set up a camp in Arizona from London, but anyway. The websites allegedly encourage people to train in street combat, landmine operations, and sniper combat. If you're supporting the Taliban and the Taliban is killing American soldiers, we're alleging you're conspiring to kill American citizens abroad, Connecticut U.S. Attorney Kevin O'Connor said in the October 2004. Well, that's pretty much bang on. Mr. Ahmed also had classified military documents describing the movements and formations of Navy Battle Group and was in email contact with an enlisted man aboard the USS Benfold, a Navy destroyer, U.S. authorities said. Well, you can bet that guy's fucked. He was also charged with maintaining email contact with a Chechenian rebel leader. Okay, now, at this point, when the guy has got Chechenian rebels, okay, talking to him, and he's recruiting, he's doing all this kind of stuff, at that stage you go, yeah, the guy is not just some political person. This guy's actively involved in fucking shit up. You know what I mean? So, you know, that would mean then that, yeah, he falls into the terrorist category, you get to fuck off. Now, it should be stated, does he deserve to die? Does he deserve to die? Well, if he's recruiting troops and training people to kill North Americans and British people, the allies, so let's break this down into allies and enemies here. So if he's working for the enemy and he's training people, gathering money for the enemy, and he's encouraging people to join the enemy and is facilitating soldiers to kill your people, then yeah, he gets the 39-cent solution. Thanks for coming out. Now, some people think that's a little bit hard and fast, but you know what? It's pretty accurate. Thanks for calling. Now, in internet news, an 11th-hour deal ahead of the UN Internet Summit in Tanzania has left the U.S. in charge of the internet's traffic system, though diplomats agreed to set up a forum to enhance international cooperation on key issues. So we've got a forum set up. So at the end of the day, the United Nations didn't take the internet away from the United States, which is not a big surprise because the UN, United Nations can't do shit. Negotiators struck an agreement on key clauses on internet governance for endorsement during the World Summit at the Internet Society, which began in Tunis, Tanzania, on Wednesday. The deal cleared the way for the summit to focus on the digital divide between the rich and poor nations. However, it left intact the United Nations' single-handed control over the private body known as Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, ICANN. And that oversees the key technical and administrative roots of the Internet. Well, being as the Internet is largely an American creation, I really don't have a problem with that. The 11th-hour agreement sidesteps a brewing row between the U.S. and the rest of the world, which officials warned could have seen the Internet torn into competing or disconnected networks. The U.S. control for the domain name system that guides the online traffic has become a sticking point for the European Union, as well as several countries such as Iran and Brazil, who argued that it should be managed by the United Nations or some other global body. Well, imagine that. Iran. Well, nobody gives a fuck what Iran says, because Iran wants to, you know, wipe Israel off the face of the map with nuclear weapons. And, well, Brazil is too busy burning their rainforest to do anything else. To mollify those bodies pushing for more international control, diplomats agreed to set up multilateral talks, including open and process, towards enhancement cooperation by relevant international organizations on oversight on public and policy issues, blah, 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 blah. So they're going to set themselves up a big fat forum, which are going to run around in little circles and not do much of fuck all. But I guess that's, you know, what you know, the United Nations does. They talk and they talk and they talk and they talk. And when they're done talking, they'll talk some more, because that's all the UN can do is talk, because they have no troops. The new process will be triggered by UN Secretary General Kofi Annan in the first quarter of 2006, according to the final draft. But there is no target set for an outcome. So, oh my gosh, this will press on and on for generations to come, and no one will ever know what the fuck is going on. So that's what's happening there. Now, it's interesting. We got this story up top about this guy who's actively recruiting troops, Muslims, to go kill Americans. Okay, that's what he's doing. And then you got this guy here, British revisionist historian David Irving is being held in Austria under laws against denying the Holocaust. Okay, so he says the Holocaust didn't happen. An Interior Ministry spokesman said the police in the province of Styria acted on a warrant issued in 1989 to arrest him last Friday. Mr. Irving was on his way to give a lecture at the capital, Vienna. In his books, Mr. Irving has argued that the scale of the extermination of the Jews by the Nazis in World War II has been exaggerated. So he's saying that not as many Jews died is what he said. He also claimed that Nazi leader Adolf Hitler knew nothing of the Holocaust. Yeah, I don't know about that one. I mean, well, let's hear what he's got to say. He told a liberal hearing in London 2000 that there had been no gas chambers at the Auschwitz camp. Okay. He lost the case, and the judge branded him an active Holocaust denier. So, the judge is saying he's full of shit. A spokesman for the Austrian Interior Minister, Rudolf Gola, told the BBC that Mr. Irving was first taken to the town of Graz, but was now in custody in Vienna. Anti-Nazi groups in the UK have congratulated the Austrian government. The chairman of the Holocaust Educational Trust, Lord Greville Janer, said he hoped the mood would lead to a successful prosecution. The head of the Holocaust Memorial Trust said denial was not a matter of opinion. Austrian law demands incisive action to protect its citizens from a repeat of the past. Well, okay. So the guy's crazy. All right, so we got a crazy guy. All right, and he says the Holocaust didn't happen. No, all these Jews didn't die. Well, where'd all the teeth come from, fuckface? But whatever. Mr. Irving was previously arrested in Austria in 1984. This time, the historian was stopped near the town of Hartberg, while reportedly on his way to address students' club in Vienna. Mr. Irving came into the spotlight in 2000 when he sued U.S. academic Deborah Lipstadt for describing him as a Holocaust denier, in her 1994 work, Denying the Holocaust, A Growing Assault on the Truth and Memory. Giving his verdict, the British judge said Mr. Irving was an active Holocaust denier and that he is anti-Semitic and racist, and he associates with right-wing extremists who promote neo-Nazism. Now, this is interesting here, because when was the last time the Nazis killed anybody? See what I'm saying? See what I'm saying here? The Nazis, this guy here, he's talking about how his standpoint is. Now, this guy's an academic, all right? Now, he's a piece of shit, without a doubt. He's crazier than a shithouse rat. That's a given, okay? But should he be in jail? Now, that's the question. Now, I got this guy up top here who's actively recruiting people. He's actively going and, bringing in people to go fight in Chechnya against a war that's currently being run, yada, yada, yada. And then we got this other guy here who's working for the bad guys as well. He says, no, there was no Holocaust. I've got all this data. You know, I'm going to court to prove that the Holocaust was exaggerated. La, 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 la. He's an academic. He writes. So he really has no real power, unless, of course... Now, if he's associating with white right-wing extremists and he's, like, encouraging people to go out and kill Jews, then I'd look at that and go, well, okay, hang on. You know, is he promoting Nazi ideals? Which, you know, is that, like, are the Nazi ideals the only ones that, do Nazis only promote Nazi ideals? Or does America promote Nazi ideals? I mean, because when you look at a lot of the stuff that the Nazis did when they were rising to power... You look at some of the stuff that America's doing as it's rising to power, there's a lot of very similar things going on here. You know what I mean? I mean, realistically, you look at that and you go, okay, you know, that's fine. Now, nobody, I mean, for somebody to sit back and say, yeah, you know, people didn't die at Auschwitz, I'm like, okay, you're a fucking idiot. Okay, because personally, come on now. Let's cut the shit. That's like saying, you know, that's ignorant and it's stupid and it's silly and it's just retarded that this guy would want to do this. And this is the big killer here. This is why everyone wants to deny the Holocaust. You'd ask, why? Why does he want to deny the Holocaust? Well, see, if it wasn't for the Holocaust, the Nazis had it going on. If it wasn't for the fact that they had the concentration camps on the go, that's a very, very powerful organization they had set up there. I mean, they rose to power very, very quickly. So, you know, there's a lot of people who are very afraid of that kind of power. So, you know, they want to make sure that this never happens again. Now, the Nazis might even have a chance of rising back to power if they can get people to forget about the Holocaust. If you get people to forget about the death camps, they might have a chance at it, which is kind of sad, which is why I believe there's so much effort to remember the Holocaust so that we could keep that kind of crazy fascism from running back into vogue. But, you know, maybe we're, with what's going on with the states right now, I'm just asking, you know, you should take a look at what happened when Nazis were running into power and when everybody else was gradually rising to power in the United States as well. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on there that kind of makes me go, whoa, a lot of parallels going on here. So, House and Senate and Patriot Act news. We got some new news on the Patriot Act here. Listen to this one here, the Patriot Act. Also, you know, interesting story to follow the last one. House and Senate negotiators reached a tentative agreement yesterday on revisions of the USA Patriot Act that would limit some of the government's powers while requiring the Justice Department to provide a better accounting of its secret requests for information on ordinary citizens. Ordinary citizens. Interesting terminology. But the agreement would leave intact some of the most controversial provisions of the anti-terrorism law, such as government access to library and bookstore records and terrorism probes, and would extend only limited new rights to the targets of such searches. For President Bush, renewal of the act would provide a boost as he looks to restore his image as a strong commander-in-chief in combating terrorism. And Democrats said yesterday the administration largely got what it wanted, a majority break after lawmakers challenged the White House in recent days on the conduct of the Iraq War, budget policies, and tax cuts. The deal would make permanent 14 Patriot Act provisions that were set to expire at the end of the year. So they're making 14 provisions permanent. Three other measures, including one allowing law enforcement agents to access local bookstore and public library records, would be extended for 7 years, or 3 years longer than the Senate had agreed to. The House initially extended the provisions for 10 years, but later voted to accept the Senate's four-year extension. So, you know, rather than 10 years, let's just knock it down to four. Somehow I still don't feel like we won. Also extended for 7 years is a provision allowing roving wiretaps that follow an individual who may use multiple means of communication rather than targeting a single phone line. Well, that kind of makes sense. If you're going to tap someone, you got to be able to cover multiple areas. You know, if you're going to watch them, you're going to watch them. The agreement also extends for 7 years a provision of a separate intelligence law passed a year ago that allows federal investigators to track an individual not connected to a foreign government but suspected of operating as a lone wolf terrorist. Now, this is an interesting one here. The lone wolf terrorism clause. So if you're a psycho and we want to make sure we can track you because we think you're a psycho operating on your own, we've got to be able to track you. Interesting. I wonder what the criteria is for you to be listed as a psycho. Does someone report you and say, this person's a psycho? This person is a psycho and needs to be tracked. In which case, you know, anybody could report anybody as a psycho. The compromise would weaken a block of House-approved death penalty provisions that had elicited concern in the Senate and in legal circles. In the event of that a jury could not agree to impose the death penalty on a convicted terrorist, House Judiciary Committee Chairman F. James Sessenbrenner had hoped to empower prosecutors to impanel a new jury. The deal also excludes a House proposal to allow death penalty for terrorist offenses that create grave risk of death. So if you almost blow up a building, you can be killed for almost blowing up a building rather than actually blowing it up. The agreement does not extend the federal death penalty to those who knowingly transport materials used in deadly terrorist attack, those who help plot a deadly attack on mass transit system, and those who participate in deadly attack on ships and maritime facilities. So it does extend the federal death penalty to those areas. So if you try to, let's say, if you knowingly transport bomb materials, you get killed. If you plot to destroy a mass transit system, you get killed. And if you participate in any way on an attack on a ship or in maritime facilities, you're also up to the death penalty. So, you know, they're going to check you out. The Republicans and Democrats said the agreement is a victory for Sensenbrenner, who defended the expanded government powers enacted after the September 11, 2001 attack. Civil liberties and liberal Democrats lamented the deal as another blow to individual rights. And three Democratic senators and three GOP senators declared the agreement unacceptable last night. This is unacceptable. Well, it's unacceptable. Are you going to be able to do anything about it? Is Congress standing up to the president? No, not on this one, said Representative Gerald Nadler, House Judiciary Committee Democrat. The agreement, which could go to final vote at the House and the Senate before the end of the week, is Congress's first effort to revise the national security measures that became law just weeks after September 11th attacks. During last year's presidential campaign, the Patriot Act was elevated to a major political issue, showcased by Bush as a sign of strength in the face of terrorism, but maligned by many Democrats as an abuse of power. Hundreds of local governments have passed resolutions decrying the law as an infringement on civil liberties. Yeah, it's kind of a scary one there. You know, I guess you can either be safe or free. Those are your choices. When Congress turned to reauthorizing the measure this year, there were bipartisan calls for major changes. House and Senate negotiators have agreed to limit the government's powers in some areas while rebuffing Bush administration requests for new subpoena powers. But on balance, the compromise sides with a stronger government But on balance, the compromise sides with stronger government hand when terrorism investigations clash with civil liberties concerns. So the interesting thing here is that you would wonder how much terrorism is actually going on in the United States. This is the other side of it. Now, there's a lot of, you know, Muslim extremist attacks going on. There's a lot of terrorism going on in the world. But how much of it is happening here at home? Now, there are groups out there who are spouting hardcore hate. Louis Farrakhan, for example. Okay, hardcore Islamo-fascist nutbar. Okay, for sure. Farrakhan's going off and talking all this shit about how, you know, all white people are evil and all this kind of jazz. Now, when you look at that, that's clearly hate crime. I don't know why the guy's still free. I don't know why nobody moves in on this guy and sorts it out. I really don't. Because, seriously, I mean, if you're going to be, you know, doing this kind of stuff, then that's the kind of guy you want to get out of there. He's talking crazy shit. He needs to be gotten out of there. And for that matter, I mean, he's already, you know, saying that he wants to support jihad and all the rest of it. So, you know, kind of a little bit messed up there. Now, is the Patriot Act just a political tool, or is this something that is, you know, foretelling of a future lockdown? I don't know. I mean, the Patriot Act is definitely was brought in under questionable means. I mean, when America burned its Reichstag there with the World Trade Center. Some weird stuff going on there. I don't know what's happening there, but there's definitely some stuff that doesn't add up. Everyone kind of glazes over it. They don't want to really look at the facts. So you wonder, you know, why this control? Why does George Bush want all this control? Either A, he's actually afraid of terrorists, or B, there's something else going on. There's something coming down the pipe that we're not aware of and that we need to be aware of. And that's the kicker right there. That's the $10,000 question. Now, one thing that could be coming down the pipe in the next couple of years is China. China scares the shit out of me. Never mind the, there's a lot of stuff going on with the Muslims and stuff like this. But this is where I'm getting a little bit concerned is with the big old China. China's doing some scary stuff. Now, in China war news, Beijing, Xi Jin, this is the guy's name, wears a jean jacket, has a razor cropped hair, and seems gravely earnest. An officer in the People's Liberation Army, he was wooed from the Beijing Vocational College 3 years ago by recruiters who talked up his technical aptitude and his patriotism. In the past decade, China has undergone two military high-tech reforms designed to give the country a modern fighting force to sustain that progress. It must attract a more gung-ho young engineers like Xi, who spends most of his time working on informational revolution that planners hope will one day allow them to see a battlefield with the same depth as the U.S. military. I will not do any direct fighting if there is a war, but I'm contributing on the technical side, he says. We are all needed in the new army. There sounds like a catchphrase, eh? China's desire, often stated, is to be a great nation. Many in Beijing feel that the country's natural right is to be the major power in Asia, but China has rarely given high marks in global military annuals. It has brown water. It has a brown water navy that doesn't navigate the open seas. It can't project power by sending forces abroad. It has relied on states like Russia for jet fighters, cruise missiles, and other advanced weapons. Yet it now appears China is methodically changing that equation. Now, why would they be doing that? In a surprisingly short time, China has accomplished two feats. One, it has focused its energy on wealth and creating an army within an army. It has devoted huge amounts of capital to create a small, high-tech army within its old 2.2 million member rifle shoe leather force. 2.2 million member army. Wow, that's a big army. The specialty of this modern force, about 15% of the People's Liberation Army, is to conduct lightning attacks on smaller foes using all-out missile attack designed to paralyze and a modern sea and air attack coordinated by high-tech communications. In other words, this new modern force is designed to attack Taiwan. Very interesting. Second, not that I've been saying that's been coming for a while. Second, China has taken painful but successful steps to create a defense industrial base or weapons building capability. The PLA has moved its factory quality control and ability to adapt foreign technology. It's bringing an indigenous small wing F-10 fighter off the production line and is moving rapidly towards a blue water navy with ships built in China. Indeed, the past 3 years have yielded impressive fruits of modernization campaigns started in the late 1990s. A nuclear attack submarine, the 093, launched in months, presumably will be capable of one day firing satellite-guided cruise missiles that can blast a cruiser or carrier. China has a now more accurate ICBMs, a host of land and sea-based cruise missiles, and about 400 Su-27 and Su-30 Russian jet fighters it didn't have before. So do the old shibboleths still apply, that the Chinese defense industry is backward, poor, and low quality? Asks even Mandiros, analysis with the RAND Corporation in Washington, D.C. No, he says. It seems China has turned the corner. For the first time in 20 years, the PLA has adopted reforms that make sense. They adopted and implemented and are really learning quickly. Medeiros is a lead author of a 300-page RAND study, New Directions for China's Defense Industry, released this month. Now, this is more and more coming down the pipe regarding China. It's really freaking me out, this whole thing with China. The PLA has undergone a revolution in communication, says James Mullivan of the Center of Intelligence Research Analysis in Washington, D.C. They have gone from dirt to wireless in a generation. Such progresses is catching attention, respect, and concern at the Pentagon. At Honolulu's U.S. Pacific Command and in military circles in Taiwan, Guam, and Tokyo, it is universally accepted that China is on its way to becoming a military challenge in Asia. U.S. planners no longer talk dismissively of China's power or potentially its reach. In a key shift, U.S. ability to quickly and easily defend Taiwan in an attack is no longer a given. Chinese cruise missiles are creating more lethal environments in the Taiwan Straits. America is not going to defend Taiwan. They're not going to get involved. This summer, General Zhu Chengyu, dean of China's National Defense University, raised the subject of weapons of mass destruction, which China rarely mentions in connection with Taiwan. Should U.S. forces and Taiwan aid Taiwan in war, he told bewildered U.S. visitors, Americans will have to be prepared that hundreds of cities will be destroyed by Chinese nuclear weapons. Aha! So what he's saying here, quite literally, is if you try to defend Taiwan, we're going to nuke you. Coming to Taiwan's rescue used to be a political decision, says Dennis Roy, an expert in cross-straits relations in Asia-Pacific Center for Security Studies in Honolulu. Now it's a political and military decision whether or not to do that. And personally, I don't think they will. I don't think they're going to do it. Doesn't make sense to me. Why would they? Now, in protest war news, now this is an interesting story here because, okay, nobody likes protesters, I guess, in the FBI. This is a little bit older, but back in October 15th of 2003, the FBI sent intelligence bulletin number 89 to 17,000 local and state law enforcement agencies around the country. The bulletin warned of pending marches in Washington and San Francisco against Bush's Iraq policy. And stated, this is what the actual note said that was faxed to all these 17,000 local law enforcement. It said, while the FBI possesses no information indicating that violent or terrorist activities are being planned as part of these protests, the The possibility exists that elements of the activist community may attempt to engage in violent, destructive, or disruptive acts. So although we don't know that there's going to be any terrorists, there is a chance for violence. The FBI catalogs some of the new threats for public safety. Several effective and ineffective innovative strategies are commonly used by protesters prior, during, and after demonstration. Protesters often use the internet to recruit, raise funds, and coordinate their activities prior to demonstrations. Activists may also make use of training camps to rehearse tactics and counter strategies for dealing with the police. Interesting. Now, anyone out there who's involved in being a protester or whatever, you don't go against cops. If anyone's trying to teach you ways to get by the cops and stuff like that, you have to be very careful there, because now you're now fighting with the police, and that's not something you want to do. Saying that dissenters are attending a training camp is intended to suggest that they are akin to killers who attend the Afghan terrorist training camps. Now, that's not necessarily true. That's being projected by the author. And the fact that protesters use the internet is irrelevant, as earlier generations of protesters use the U.S. mail. Also not irrelevant, because, well, if that's what they're using to correlate information, this is a method for you to find out what they're trying to do. Since the FBI computers are far behind the technology curve, and if they believe that, you're on crack, FBI analysts may be unaware that the internet use is pervasive among Americans of all political stripes. They're not saying that people aren't. They're just saying that they might be using it. After warning about the dangers that extremist elements could engage in vandalism, trespassing, and the formation of human chains, the FBI casts suspicion on almost anyone attending the protest. Well, you're at a protest because you're angry with the government. So, I mean, the FBI did not... They clearly stated in the beginning that they didn't believe there was any terrorism going on there. What they did say was that there was, you know, the possibility that someone could turn violent, which has happened before. Even the more peaceful techniques can create a climate of disorder, block access to a site, draw large numbers of police officers to a specific location in order to weaken security at other locations, obstruct traffic, and possibly intimidate people from attending the events being protested. Well, possibly intimidate people. If you're intimidated by cops, then, you know, I guess they can't really control that. If you're afraid of cops, then, oh, well, whatever. I'm not really intimidated by police, personally. Being as I pay their salary, they don't really scare me. The FBI promulgated the doctrine of collective guilt for all demonstrators. If anyone is on the streets in the same city as a masked anarchist or troublemaker, is guilty as a person who throws the brick through a Starbucks window. Well, now, let's take a look at that statement. If you're down at a protest, okay, and you see a bunch of guys with ski masks there, and they start doing damage, and you stand there and you don't either try to stop them, then you're permitting that to happen. Now, some people will say, well, what are you talking about, John? Well, hear me out here. Let's say, you know, you're going down the street, and there's a guy, you know, grabs this woman in the middle of the street, throws her down, and starts to rape her right there in the street. Well, do you stand by and watch? No. You don't stand by and watch. You kick his ass. So if you're out there in the street and somebody's breaking the law, you have to make the choice of either, you know, going to get help or, you know, try to deal with it yourself. Now, it could be argued. The prudent thing, of course, for me to say is don't try to deal with it yourself. You'd want to, at the very least, get the fuck out of there. The guy's wandering around, you know, he's going to start damaging and breaking stuff. You want to get as far away from this guy as possible to show that you are not involved with this. Don't march beside him. Otherwise, you are, in fact, saying that you think his activities are okay. Anyway, the FBI also portrayed practically any defensive measures by demonstrators as highly suspicious. Extremists may be prepared to defend themselves against law enforcement officials during a course of a demonstration. The FBI offered a list of telltale signs of subversion. Masks, gas masks, goggles, scarves, scuba masks, filter masks, and sunglasses can serve to minimize the effects of tear gas and pepper spray, as well as obscure one's identity. Now, that's true, though. I mean, if you're going to a protest and you're bringing a gas mask, chances are you're expecting some shit. Extremists may also employ body protection equipment, layer clothing, hard hats and helmets, sporting equipment, life jackets, etc., to protect themselves during marches. Again, if you're walking around wearing hard armor at a march with a gas mask on, then chances are you are there to get into the shit. Not wrong. Implying that wearing layered clothing is an unfair or illicit tactic is bizarre. In regular streets, yes, but if you're at a protest or a rally and a guy's wearing hard armor, yeah. As if anything that blunts the impact of a policeman's baton should be considered aiding and abetting Al-Qaeda. I love guys who write like this. Like, you know, making that leap is just, this is insane. You know, if the cops are there, if you're at a protest and the cops show up and they're like, disperse, you should probably disperse, because what do you suppose is going to happen if you don't? The FBI also implied that any self-defense measures should be considered a provocation. That's not what that's totally subjective. And does the FBI really think that wearing sunglasses is a sign of a person conspiring to avoid the effects of tear gas? No, but they're saying it's a method to obscure your identity. The intelligence bulletin concluded, law enforcement agencies should be alert to the possible indicators of protest activity and report any potentially illegal acts to the nearest FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force. If local police take the hint and start pouring in information, the task force could build a total information awareness-like database of anti-war groups and activists. Well, now there's a couple points here. If you're just writing letters, go to a march, sit down, you know, and when they show up and tell you to move, they are the law. So you can either move or you can take what you got coming to you. If you're going to sit there and be like, no, we're not moving, we're going to cause problems, then I guess you get what you paid for. That's just the way it is. And incidentally, what the fuck are you doing at the protest anyway? Like, what are you really affecting at the protest? But, you know, I've already had that speech. Now, in Methuselah news, this is a very interesting story here. Genetic experimentation to unlock the secrets of the aging process has created organisms that live 6 times their usual lifespan, raising hopes that it might be possible to slow aging in humans. The geneticist behind the study says that increase in lifespan is so striking, they may have tapped into one of the most fundamental mechanisms that controls the rate at which living creatures age. Very exciting stuff. The tests were carried out on single-celled organisms, forcing them into what researchers refer to as an extreme survival mode. Instead of growing quickly and showing signs of aging, the organisms became resilient to damage and were better able to repair the genetic defects that build up with age, often leading to cancer later in life. When you do this genetic manipulation, you can get some of the longest lifespans ever described, said Walter Longo, biomedical gerontologist at the University of Southern California. We have good reason to believe that this genetic effect is conserved in other organisms. We're working with mice and human cells now, and we're already starting to see the same response. Very interesting. If we could actually take this technology and apply it to humans, that would be very hot. So it's something we should probably follow that link and take a look at this research here to make sure that we can all get our hands on it and not just, certain people. It's important that everybody has a chance at life extension and not just the super rich. Now, in Space Marine news, how's this? Anyone ever out there seen that movie Soldier with Kurt Russell? Great film. Great movie. Anyone wants to see that? Fantastic movie. But anyway, in Space Marine news, scientists may have found the gene for fear. Fear. This is a wild story. The gene that controls production of a protein in the region of the brain linked with a fearful response. Their findings, published on Thursday, could lead to new treatments for mental disorders such as post-traumatic stress disorder or generalized anxiety, so they could just remove fear. The gene, known as Stathmin or Oncoprotein 18, is a highly concentrated in the amygdala, a region of the brain associated with fear and anxiety, the researchers report in Thursday's issue of the journal Cell. Now, I wonder what would happen if they took a synthetic version of that gene and could spray it out. Could they have fear in a bottle? Like, could you spray fear on a crowd? This is a major advance in the field of learning and memory that will allow for a better understanding of post-traumatic stress disorder, phobias, borderline personality disorder, and other human anxiety diseases, said Gleb Shumvatsky of Rutgers University in Jersey, who worked on the study. It will provide important information on how learned and innate fear is experienced and processed, and may point to a way to apply new therapies. Mice genetically engineered so they would not produce Stathmin have brain irregularities and were less able to remember fear conditioned responses, the researchers reported. So it's pretty weird research so far. Learned fear develops after conditioning, when the person is stung by a wasp and fears the insect afterwards. These memories are formed in the amygdala. Amygdala. I guess that's how you say it. Amygdala. This is the first time it has been shown that the protein called Stathmin, product in the Stathmin gene, is linked to the fear conditioning pathway, said Vladimir Bolshev, director of the Cellular Neurology Library at the Harvard University McLean's Hospital, who also worked on the study. Also, the mice showed unusual behavior. For example, they began to Budo chants and began attacking the cages. Mice instinctively avoid open spaces, but the Stathmin-free mice showed no fear and often explored more open areas than normal mice, the researchers found. So they were uber mice. They were badass Rambo mice. They were space marine mice. So the gene may control both learned and innate fear, researchers said. The mice might be useful for testing drugs or other treatments of anxiety disorders. And they shall know no fear. And finally, I've got this burning Sony news. Sony's rootkit-style DRM software, XCP, designed to prevent copyright infringement, looks like it's breaching a terms of copyright agreement itself. Interesting. The rootkit itself is illegal. The fact it contains code written by Motion Picture Association of America's Villain of the Week for several years running, DVD John Johansson, who was dragged through Norwegian courts by the MPAA after using a very dubious expansion of U.S. law for circumventing the DRM on DVDs. Johansson eventually prevailed in having spurious charges against him thrown out. The irony of a company using code from someone who circumvented DRM to develop even nastier form of DRM without even saying thanks will surely feature in geek trivia quizzes for years to come. The British company that developed DRM software for Sony, First for Internet Limited, has included free software code covered by the Free Software Foundation's LGPL, a cousin of the GPL, amateur sleuths have discovered. The LGPL, or Lesser General Public License, was designed to protect authors' rights for chunks of code rather than finished programs. It's a complicated area with subtle distinction between rights over code that is compiled into and distributed as part of a full binary program, or code that is only called at as the program is executed. But it's pretty clear that the First for Internet has used the code without observing the terms under which it's distributed. Terms backed by the power of copyright, one of our greatest inventions. And as we all know, what happens to people who don't respect copyright? Dun, 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 dun. Today's daily hack is called Kobe and Backup. Kobe and Backup is a multi-thread program that can be used to schedule and backup your files, directories from the original location or other directories, drives to the same computer or at a computer in your network. FTP backup is also supported in both directions, download and upload. Very cool. Kobe and Backup exists in two different versions, application and service. The program uses very few resources and can be running in the background on your system, checking your backup schedule and executing your backups when necessary. Kobe and Backup is not an unusual backup application. It It only copies your files and folders in original or compressed mode to other destinations, creating security copy as a result. So Kobe and Backup can better be described as a schedule for security copies. It's also free and supports methods of compression and strong encryption. And that's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get the information you need to stay alive. This has been a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of 65 people, 11 one-time donators, 52 continuing subscribers, and 2 new subscribers for a total of 65. If you would like to help keep this daily broadcast on the air, please visit randmedia.ca and click on the Donate tab because every little bit helps. And thanks again to everyone, their assistance in gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any of the pertinent stories, please email them to newsreel. That's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L at randradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album by Rob Zombie, Hellbilly Deluxe. And I'm going to leave you now with a track sent in by Sonic Sum. That's the guys who did the song. And the song is called Velour 80 Grit. So until tomorrow, that is what Server said. End of line. Impair the loaded oxygen contacts. Collective waste station is your brain's intact. Subtle interference and coherent in fact. The sedated measure waits forever. Impair the loaded oxygen contacts. Collective waste station is your brain's intact. Subtle interference and coherent in fact. The sedated measure waits forever. In addition to the suction, sweeps an undertow with the maniac's grimace, with a premise that permits the value. Humans losing tactic through the aerobatic dynamic slanted premonition.
of the first third world of warming all. Succulents ain't by this dance with one chance to be absorbed. Absence of the manic slash, now in eternal spring. Hoping the copper tones and silver glass return my innocence. I can reflect the widow's peak from the window's pane select. Redirect the light beams from what remains in a correction for my Windex. Sight tomorrow we'll all be singing, but tonight we just complain. Slipping into a refrain as if it were explained that I'd be strangling with my lifeline. And I embrace lead, that's irrelevant, so my objection stays sustained.
Oxygen contact. Collective waste station is your brain syntax. Impaired, diluted oxygen contact. Collective waste station is your brain syntax.
My addiction is to hail in a daggered sail for my descent. Indecent exposure swag across the galaxy for my biopsy. Paranormal abdomen strain in the throat approaches thought. Two cloak and steak knife, dramatic pause, breach contract clause and the masquerade applause. Passive arrogance countering my plastic grave concern. Ignite, spite, second spit and split with an urge to quit. Cinch is unbearable, an overturned variable, futuristic vegetable. Placemat minds face that time with caution. Velocity uncontrolled, pressure size from nauseous to ferocious. Let me underdose on my unhappiness long enough for me to find sure footing. Before rebooting, returning and retrospective.
Impaired, diluted oxygen contact. Collective waste station is your brain syntax. Subtle interference, incoherent in fact. The sedated measure waits forever. Impaired, diluted oxygen contact. Collective waste station is your brain syntax. Subtle interference, incoherent in fact. The sedated measure waits forever.
Shoebox, Commodore, Pentium, pendulums laced. Trip circuit searching the bio-waste while sniffing paste. Luton passage, handle gravity eyes and the basal magenta side. Trip love and easy go, letting my Hansel track and nasal cavity relieved. Not like I believe, but it breathed without the aid of life support. In the charade of the night court. If who I veer at fork in passing, I can see the masking tape harassing me a sight. Stained like Beethoven's fifth, for which I do sedate. With my lips in crate, overhaul the wood to make it appear metallic. Palette empty, sensing my soul release.